get the hour started by talking sports with Deb Stroman, Dr. Debbie Stroman from UNC, joining us now on the phone to talk about the latest big news on and off the field. And we're talking about baseball this week with Shohei Ohtani, the latest rookie sensation for the Los Angeles Angels. Lost a game last night to Boston, his first career loss on the mound, but he's been a great pitcher so far, great hitter. We knew that coming in, but it's not just the on-the-field stardom for Ohtani that's got people talking. It's also some off-the-field issues, particularly the salary that he's making, or more to the point, the amount of money he's not making with the Los Angeles Angels. Dr. Stroman joining us now on the phone to talk about all of that. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to see the sunshine and the warmer weather. It's been a little crazy here the past month trying to figure it all out, but the one thing that's consistent is sports. And so even though we have a lot of people focus on the NFL draft, which is coming up, I believe, next Thursday, there are those baseball lovers out there who they don't wait until the playoffs. They are ready from day one, spring training on. And the newest sensation, who's called the Japanese Babe Ruth, Ohtani, as you mentioned, is really, really making a lot of people pay attention to baseball because of his ability to pitch and hit. He's nicknamed the Babe Ruth because he's the first player, I think they said since 1921, to win a game as a starting pitcher and then hit a first inning home run in a 2-day span.
That's really cool. So, I mean, and this is something that we, I mean, this is the level of talent that we haven't seen before in a long, long time. So everyone's excited about him. He's coming in. He's already making a splash, like really, really living up to the hype. So now we look at the contract that he's signed with the Angels, and we see he's making the league minimum, which you look at the amount of excitement that he's generated and the amount of excitement he generated coming in, and the fact that he's living up to it on the field, you look at how much he's making or how much he's not making, and there's kind of a disparity there.
Well, you're exactly right. And the way the Major League Baseball, I guess its reputation is, oh, you want to be a baseball player because you can make the most money, no salary cap. But people don't look at the other end. The way it's set up right now is that the Major League Players Association, they only represent players who are currently in the minor league. So it's similar to a player who would be coming out of a draft. They want to focus on those players who are playing right now and who are signed. And because of that, you don't have necessarily the legal support. You don't necessarily have a group of players like you to help you negotiate. And so for him, he ends up signing for what some people say he's worth more than $200 million, but he's signed for a bargain rate over 6 years for a league minimum of $545,000 a year. Now, he did get a one-time signing bonus of $2.3 million, but many people say if he is that good, why is he paid so little? Well, it's because of the legalities of it. The other issue is that many teams, what they will do, because they value someone so much, and they don't want to lose that player, is that they'll do other things, even at the risk of facing a penalty. So, for example, the Angels, his team, they're paying his team back in Japan, the Nippon Ham Fighters, $20 million to allow him to play in the United States. So that's interesting as well.
And that's more money that they're paying to his old team in Japan to let him play for the Angels than they're paying him over the next 6 years, right? Because you add that all up, that's like, what, $6 million or so that he's getting, which is pretty good. But his old team is getting three times as much, and they're not doing anything but letting him go.
Well, that's similar to the argument around players and why they should be paid more. It's because the owners aren't doing anything. Now, some would argue free market, and the owners are brilliant enough to put together a league, put together the competition, the television packages, all of that. And so they deserve to make as much money as they can. Whereas others say, well, you're not out there on the field, out on the court, you're not doing the work, so why are you making so much money? And then back to the point around people will go ahead and cheat because they know the penalty is not as bad as you know, what you get in terms of a great player. And some people use in the college ranks, they'll say Louisville is that example. They continue to cheat because it's still not worth it, as in the penalties aren't that bad. I'm noting the Atlanta Braves, they were penalized by the league for contract violations, but they continued to go ahead and route their players through friends and associates because it was worth it.
Yeah, we're speaking with Dr. Debbie Stroman, and we're talking about salaries, especially for rookies and younger players in Major League Baseball. And you mentioned the free market there, which is an interesting kind of twist on this, because you think, oh, well, the players and the owners are negotiating on the free market. But in this case, they're not, because the agreement between the owners and the players union has a whole bunch of restrictions on what a younger player coming into the league, in this case, coming into the league from overseas, can even sign for. So if Ohtani wanted to launch a bidding war with 15 teams all vying for his for him to sign with them and try to command the couple hundred million dollars that he might be worth, the rules of the contract stipulate that he can't even do that, right?
That's exactly right. And the way it's really set up, if you really do a deep dive on this, it's set up that when you are at your best, that is when you have the least bargaining power. Mm-hmm. And for baseball, they say that hitters tend to hit their peak in the first 6 years. And so the best time to negotiate is early on, but that's when you restrict it. And so if you decide to hold off, I won't come into the league till later on, well, then your ability to play as well statistically is not as high. So then you don't have as much of a bargaining chip. So they really get you, and you can imagine what it's like for pitchers, because, you know, they age even a lot faster, mm-hmm. In fact, as soon as they get on the mound. The other thing I want to bring up is the influence, or the we're seeing more and more Japanese players who are coming over, but we're getting really, really good players, like superstars. Mm-hmm. But the differences between the Major League Baseball and Japanese baseball, number one, the MLB has a harder mound. And so being an old athlete like myself, I can appreciate running or walking on wood versus cement or a very hard surface like that mound. The seams of the baseball are actually different as well. So it takes some time, obviously months and months, to adjust to the different ball. And so, of course, it makes it different, harder to command the baseball. And then the biggest one, similar to when players sign in whatever sport in New York, the media demands are much different here mm-hmm. in the United States. In Japan, you don't have any clubhouse access. So now you bring in players. They probably, most of them need a translator. I know the LA team, they said they had a separate area for him after games because there's so much media there who just want to see him. And the area is not big enough for his crowd, plus the regular media who's just following the team.
Speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman, and we got to let you go in a second, but before we do, I'm sure there are people out there listening to this going, man, why are they complaining about his contract? He's making $500,000 a year plus a $2 million signing bonus. He's doing okay. But one thing that is worth pointing out in the midst of all this is that these rules that are set up to make it difficult for someone who's coming into the league to make more than the league minimum, those same rules are also affecting how much an owner is free to pay someone who is a minor league baseball player. And I think anyone who has seen Bull Durham, for instance, will know that minor league players, they're not making $500,000. They're barely scraping by on the money that they're making, and in a lot of cases living in kind of surprising amounts of poverty at that level.
And you're exactly right. And so many times when this question comes up, people always point to the athletes, as in the athletes are doing really well, who are on TV, who are starting, who are making, who get all the attention, all the women, all of that, versus looking at the flip side, as in the majority of the athletes who are not getting that, who have to deal with very, very uncomfortable working conditions, similar to corporate America, where you see, you know, the executive might be in a jet flying around and, you know, being seen all about town and interviews and everything. But if you look at the bottom of the pyramid, you have to look at that situation. And then, again, it goes back to capitalism. Are you okay with an owner who many argue really doesn't do anything, so to speak, as in the physical activity, but yet they're making not, you know, 2 times or 10 times, but thousands of times the salary of the entire employment labor force. And I think there have been a number of studies outside of sport where you look at People start questioning whether or not an executive should make 400 or 1,000 times their employees. Is their worth really that much?
It's an interesting issue. We'll keep following it. Got to let you go. But Dr. Debbie Stroman, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.